were to be implemented, but left how to act up to everyone to decide for themselves. How does Toyota ensure that everyone in the organization learns and follows the improvement kata? That is the subject of Part 4. Part 4. The Coaching Kata. How Toyota Teaches the Improvement Kata. Introduction to Part 4. Once we become aware of Toyota's Improvement Kata, described in Part 3, it gives rise to several new questions, such as, how do we teach everyone in the organization the Improvement Kata? How do we ensure people are engaged in the improvement process and utilize the Improvement Kata correctly in their daily work? How will we know what skills individuals need to work on? How do we ensure that appropriate challenges, target conditions are developed? How do we ensure that the PDCA cycle is carried out correctly and effectively? How will we ensure that leaders have a grasp of the true situation at the process level in the organization? How will we pass on the improvement kata from generation to generation? Toyota's answer to these questions is its coaching kata, which is the subject of Part 4. The purpose of the coaching kata is to teach the improvement kata and bring it into the organization. We will look into the role of managers and leaders at Toyota in teaching the improvement kata to everyone in the organization and making that kata work as effectively as possible every day. Part 4 is not about how Toyota trains production workers in their jobs. It is about how Toyota works to develop and maintain improvement kata behavior across the organization. In Chapter 7, we will first take a brief look at who is actually applying the improvement kata to production processes in Toyota factories. There have been a lot of misconceptions about this. Then, in Chapter 8, we will look at how application of the improvement kata is taught and managed at Toyota. Chapter 7. Who carries out process improvement at Toyota? A question that has been debated for many years is, who should carry out process improvements? Here are three common but problematic answers to that question. Number one, the process operators. One of the widely held opinions about continuous improvement at Toyota is that it is primarily self-directed, with teams of production operators autonomously making improvements in their own processes. Some typical comments along these lines are, the operators are closest to the process and are empowered. How can we get our line operators to solve problems? How can we make continuous improvement run by itself? Operator autonomy is a commonly held and unfortunate misconception about Toyota's approach. It is not at all how operators and improvement are handled at Toyota. For one, it is unfair and ineffective to ask operators on their own to simultaneously make parts, struggle with problems, and improve the process, which is why Toyota calls autonomous operator team concepts disrespectful of people. It is physically impossible for production operators to work fully loaded to the planned cycle time in a one-by-one production flow and simultaneously make process improvements. Furthermore, many operators are just beginning to develop their understanding of the improvement kata and their problem-solving skills. There are currently no autonomous, self-directed teams at Toyota. This does not mean that we should not empower or engage process operators. In fact, teaching people the improvement kata by engaging them in it is critical to Toyota's success. It only means that concepts like self-directed work teams are not such an effective way for an organization to empower and engage people. Number two, leave it to chance? I have not heard anyone actually give this answer, but in many cases our comments and actions, comments like these, indicate this is exactly what is happening. Endon gives everyone in the plan information. This alerts everyone that there is a problem. Any person walking through the area can see. The number of Endon-style warning lamp systems that have been installed in our factories in the last 20 years, for example, is astonishing. Yet in many factories, the red lamps are lighting up and no one is responding. The basic point here is that if we assume anyone, or everyone, is responsible, then no one is responsible. Number three, a special team. As we have already discussed, this will not work if we want improvement to occur at every process every day. At Toyota, factory staff includes no specific continuous improvement agents. The improvement kata is embedded into every work process, and everyone is taught to work along the lines of the improvement kata. Who does it? In 2004, Professor Koichi Shimizu of Okayama University published a paper about continuous improvement of production processes in Toyota factories. In his paper, Shimizu classifies process improvement activity at Toyota in two categories: improvement carried out by production operators themselves through quality circles, the suggestion system, and similar initiatives. Shimizu calls this voluntary improvement activity. Improvement carried out by team leaders, production supervisory staff, and engineers as part of their job function. There are some surprises in Shimizu's paper. Specifically, his research suggests that only about 10% of realized improvement in productivity and cost at Toyota comes from the first category, whereas about 90% comes from the second. In addition, the main purpose of the first category, improvements carried out by production operators themselves, is not so much the improvement itself, but rather to train production operators in Kaizen mind and ability, and to identify workers who are candidates for promotion to team leader. The purpose of the second category of improvement, on the other hand, is clearly cost reduction via diligent and constant improvement of productivity and quality. What I have been able to learn so far about who makes process improvements on Toyota shop floors fits with Shimizu's findings. These team leaders, group leaders, superintendents, and various levels of manufacturing engineers are the primary people who apply and coach application of the improvement kata to production processes. This process improvement activity represents well over 50% of their work time, which is not surprising, since at Toyota the improvement kata is actually a way of managing. Toyota production operators, called team members, are of course also regularly involved in making process improvements, but these are usually improvements in the operator's immediate work envelope, which are carried out in collaboration with and under the guidance of the team leader. It's the responsibility of team leaders to encourage and get improvement suggestions from their team members, and, conversely, operator promotion to team leader is determined in part on how much improvement initiative and skill an operator demonstrates. Both operator and team leader, in other words, have incentive to work together on process improvement. Working with target conditions. In the case of a new process or product, management sets a target cost and a target date for production. The first process target condition, that is, work standard, is typically established by the process's group leader and a production engineer. This is then given to the production team, the team leader, and team members. As the production stage begins, the production team and their group leader work to achieve that target condition, which can take several weeks. Once regular production stabilizes, then further target conditions, called standards or targets, are developed. Group leaders, team leaders, and team members focus on target conditions in their process and on understanding and resolving daily production problems. Themes, targets, plans, and initiatives are announced by senior management. These are worked down into the organization via mentor-mentee dialogues, more on this in the next chapter, and are converted into process target conditions. The conversion of outcome targets into process target conditions generally begins at the superintendent level. Managers at this level ensure that target conditions, improvement efforts, and projects at individual processes follow improvement kata thinking, fit together for a flowing value stream, match with the organization's targets, and serve customer requirements. Responding to process abnormalities. A common way of reacting to process abnormalities in our factories is to have production operators record them so they can be compiled into summaries and Pareto charts. Sounds like a good idea, but it is not effective for improvement. I once listened to a plant manager proudly explaining a Pareto chart of problems and how the top problem was being worked on. One of my colleagues said in response, "Oh, and the rest of those problems you are shipping to the customer?" Which I thought was a pretty good insight. The information provided by Pareto charts usually comes too late to be useful for process improvement efforts. By the time a problem has risen to the top of a Pareto chart, it has already caused a lot of damage and grown complicated. The root cause trail is cold, and we become involved in analyzing post-mortem data instead of understanding what is actually happening on the shop floor now. It is interesting to note how often the largest category in a Pareto chart is other, that is, an accumulation of smaller problems. This does not mean that Pareto charts should be abolished, but that they should not be thought of as our first choice for becoming aware of and dealing with process problems. Here are two aspects of how Toyota thinks about dealing with process problems. Number one, the response to process abnormalities should be immediate. Why? If we wait to go after the causes of a problem, the trail becomes cold and problem-solving becomes more difficult. We lose the opportunity to learn. If left alone, small problems accumulate and grow into large and complicated problems. Responding right away means we may still be able to adjust and achieve the day's target. Telling people that quality is important but not responding to problems is saying one thing but doing another. Lean value streams are closely coupled, and a problem in one area can quickly lead to problems elsewhere. Number two, the response to process abnormalities should come from someone other than the production operators. Why? An example helps here. Imagine a one-by-one flow assembly cell in one of our factories with an autonomous team of operators. In the cell, there is a status counter that displays two numbers. One number is the actual quantity produced, which increases each time a finished item is scanned. The second number is the target quantity, which increases automatically as each tack time interval passes. What happens in this process when one operator experiences a problem? The cell stops. What do the operators do? They try to fix the problem so they can resume production. Say it takes a few minutes to do that, during which time the target quantity counter continues to advance. Now the problem is fixed and the cell is able to run again. What do the operators do? Naturally, they resume production, probably as quickly as possible, since the line is now a little behind according to the status counter. Yet the moment the problem occurred, while the trail is hot, is the best time to learn why it happened. Looking into it later will be fruitless. Can you see the conflict in our thinking? Do we want the operators to make parts, or do we want them to go into problem investigation? They cannot do both simultaneously. Problems are normal, and if we set up autonomous processes, there is no way the operators can be successful. These kinds of autonomous production processes seem to reflect a flawed assumption that if everyone did what they were supposed to do, there would be no problems. In order to be able to respond to process problems as they occur, production processes at Toyota Group companies are supported and monitored by a team leader. This team leader is the designated person to respond first and immediately to any process problem. Although team leaders respond to every abnormality, each response does not trigger problem-solving activity, which is usually initiated in response to repeating problems. The process's work standard, the target condition, is owned by the team leader, who uses it to help spot abnormalities in the process. The team leader is not monitoring the process to police its failings, but to be acquainted with how it is working. With team leaders at its processes, Toyota has, in comparison to many other factories, one official extra level of indirect staffing. This does not sound lean, but it is an enabler for process improvement because there is someone to respond as problems occur, and the root cause trail is still hot. As mentioned earlier, you can expose problems only to the degree that you can handle them. With its team leader approach, Toyota can handle more problems and can thus learn and improve more. Having a fast response system in place then gives Toyota the ability to staff its production processes with no more than the correct number of operators, which in turn quickly reveals problems. This combination represents an improving system. Conversely, manufacturers with autonomous teams of operators generally need to have extra operators in their processes, which, as already mentioned, causes workarounds, obscures problems, and leads to a static system. Interestingly, at Toyota, having this improvement and response system, team leaders, does not equal having more people in total compared to other companies. On the contrary, there are two reasons for this. Because of the team leader's presence, the process can be staffed with only the correct number of operators, no extra. Because there is an improvement and response system in place, beginning with the team leader, over time productivity is improved and even fewer operators are needed. We should be careful with overly simple, quick benefit statements such as cut indirect labor or flatten the organization chart, because they can lead to sub-optimization and a dangerously static system. Chapter 8. The Coaching Kata, Leaders as Teachers. Coaching is required. Suppose we would like to teach a team of athletes some new skills and have them do well in competition. In this case, we would certainly not expect that simply explaining a different way of doing something, no matter how well that explaining is done, will be sufficient for altering their behavior. It is not possible to objectively assess one's own performance and see what skills you need to work on. This is because we tend not to perceive our own habits and do not know what we do not know. In the case of athletes, we naturally expect them to practice under the observation and guidance of an experienced coach, and that the necessity of having a coach will not go away. If no one observes them and provides feedback, they can end up internalizing the wrong routines. It is the same at Toyota, where the improvement kata does not happen automatically or autonomously. Toyota's managers and leaders work hard every day to both teach it and to keep improvement going in an effective manner. Since improvement and adaptation are central to Toyota's business philosophy, normal daily management equals process improvement, it is not surprising that managers and leaders there work to ensure that improvement happens. What is surprising, however, is how they go about it. The role of leaders at Toyota. The primary task of Toyota's managers and leaders does not revolve around improvement per se, but around increasing the improvement capability of people. That capability is what, in Toyota's view, strengthens the company. Toyota's managers and leaders develop people who, in turn, improve processes through the improvement kata. A quote from Peter Drucker: "We now accept the fact that learning is a lifelong process of keeping abreast of change, and the most pressing task is to teach people how to learn." Developing the improvement capability of people at Toyota is not relegated to the human resources or the training and development departments. It is part of every day's work in every area, and it is managers and supervisors who are expected to teach their people the improvement kata. The improvement kata is part of how people are managed day to day. This means, of course, that the managers and leaders must themselves be experienced in using the improvement kata. Because the improvement kata is a set of behavioral guidelines, it is something that we learn through repeated practice. It takes conditioning to make behavioral routines become second nature, and consequently, a lot of Toyota's managerial activities involve having people practice the improvement kata with their guidance. For team leaders and group leaders, this teaching occupies more than 50% of their time, and for higher-level managers, it can also occupy up to 50%. Developing people in this manner is part of a manager's or supervisor's evaluation, bonus, promotion, and salary. Training while working on the real thing. We may think of taking classes and seminars to learn, but Toyota thinks of working through actual improvement challenges as how one learns. There are some classroom training courses at Toyota, but to ensure that improvement happens and that people internalize the improvement kata, the primary emphasis is on doing. Managers and leaders at Toyota teach people the improvement kata by guiding them in making real improvements in real processes. This approach is not unlike skills training in sports, where training means athletes performing an actual activity over and over under the observation and guidance of an experienced coach. By comparison, in many of our companies, the concept of training seems to have devolved into classroom teaching and simulation exercises. Unfortunately, classroom training and simulations cannot ensure change, mastery, and consistency. Classroom training alone, even if it includes simulations, at best only achieves awareness. We can only discern what people are actually learning and how they are thinking, and hence what they need to learn and practice next, as they try to apply in real life what they are being taught. Toyota does not make a distinction between learning the improvement kata and improving processes. Toyota's teachers, that is, managers and leaders, observe and work with their students as those students are doing the actual activity day to day. Of course, as you might expect, at Toyota there is a kata for how managers and leaders do this. The Coaching Kata. Toyota's kata for teaching the improvement kata is a mentor-mentee dialogue, which probably has its roots in the Buddhist master-apprentice teaching method. Like the improvement kata, the coaching kata is often not directly visible to visitors and benchmarkers. Yet the development of continuous improvement and adaptation at Toyota through application of the improvement kata has depended to a considerable degree on such coaching. Everyone at Toyota has a mentor. Mastery is the objective of any kata, and even people at higher levels in Toyota are honing their skills and working toward that goal. Like the improvement kata, the pattern of the coaching kata is also practiced at all levels throughout Toyota. Each employee is assigned a more experienced employee, a mentor, who provides active guidance through the process of making actual improvements or dealing with work-related situations. That mentor, in turn, has his or her own mentor who is doing the same. It is the buddy system, or two-man rule, with one buddy being the mentor. These mentor-mentee relationships are not necessarily linked to the organizational hierarchy. For shop floor operators, their mentor is their team leader, who is in turn supported by the group leader. However, above these levels in the organization, you may get mentored not only by your immediate superior, but also by someone else who may be assigned to you based on your current activities and development needs. Over the years, you will have different mentors. It easily takes 10 years of practicing the improvement kata and the coaching kata before both become so ingrained that one can be a good mentor. This is one reason why Toyota has, in the past, avoided bringing managers in from outside the company and instead preferred to develop them from within. One of Toyota's key challenges while growing rapidly is to have enough mentors. A person's need for coaching never goes away. Regardless of how much experience one has gained, it is unlikely that anyone can become so good at discerning the reality of a situation and applying the improvement kata that coaching will no longer be necessary. The intention is that both the improvement kata and the coaching kata increasingly become second nature, automatic, and reflexive, as a person rises in the organization. The mentor-mentee dialogue. The mentor, coach, guides the mentee in applying the improvement kata through a back-and-forth dialogue over a period of time, which has sometimes been compared to a game of catch. Mentor to mentee to mentor to mentee, and so on. The mentor-mentee dialogue is utilized, for example, when a current situation is being assessed, when a target condition is being developed, and then when the routine of the five questions comes into play. One key element in Toyota's mentor-mentee dialogue is that the intention is for the mentee to figure things out for him or herself under guidance, which is a well-known teaching method. The dialogue often begins with the mentor giving the mentee a purposely vague assignment, need, or challenge. For example, the mentor may ask the mentee to have a look at a problem or situation, or suggest something like, "We should wash parts within the one-by-one assembly flow at this process rather than in batches." The mentor then asks what the mentee proposes. The mentee's answer helps the mentor discern how the mentee is thinking and what input the mentor should give next. That is why the mentor's assignment or challenge is often vague at the start, so he can see how the mentee is approaching the situation. The mentee gives her observations or proposal, sometimes in bullet form in a single-page document. More on this later. After this is presented to the mentor, it is often pushed back to the mentee in the first cycle with a suggestion such as, "Please think about this some more," or simply, "Why?" This is only the first of several catch cycles, through which the mentee's analysis and proposal become progressively more developed and detailed. Once the current situation has been analyzed and the target condition defined and detailed to the mentor's satisfaction, then the mentee's role becomes planning and carrying out PDCA cycles, also with the oversight of the mentor. In doing this, the mentee often has to justify actions to her mentor and to define in advance the expected result of an action. The point to remember here is that the mentor is asking questions of the mentee not to direct the mentee to a particular solution, although it may appear that way, but rather to learn what and how the mentee is thinking and how the mentee is approaching the situation. The mentor works to teach the mentee the routine of the improvement kata by providing step-by-step guidance based on the mentee's reactions and responses along the way. The mentor guides the mentee through the improvement kata, but in a manner that has the mentee learn for him or herself the routine and thinking inherent in that kata, The mentee is learning by personally gaining insight. The highest, though somewhat bittersweet, praise for a mentor is if the mentee feels he or she learned and achieved the target condition independently. As an aside, from my observations, I can say that the mentor's job is as difficult as the mentee's. A second and clever element of mentor-mentee dialogues at Toyota is that while the mentee is responsible for the doing, the mentor bears considerable responsibility for the results, but should not give solutions to the mentee. This overlap of responsibility creates a bond between mentor and mentee, because if a mentee fails, then it is the mentor who will get the scrutiny. A common expression which is frequently used at Toyota, if the learner hasn't learned, the teacher hasn't taught. The mentee is the person who works on the problem, whereas the mentor's task is to keep the mentee in the corridor of the improvement kata routine. Of course, to be able to guide the mentee in this way, the mentor must also be looking at the situation and often thinking one step ahead of the mentee, but no more than a step ahead. The mentor works to bring the mentee into the behavior corridor prescribed by the improvement kata, but ultimately the mentor must accept the solution that the mentee develops. Leading the mentee to a solution would block the development of the mentee's capability, that is, the purpose of the mentor-mentee dialogue approach. Although Toyota mentors are usually not directive about solutions, they can, however, be directive about how to go about understanding a situation and developing solutions. For example, once he has heard from the mentee in one cycle, the mentor may, at times, be directive about the next step. A third element of the mentor-mentee dialogue is that it is not just learning by doing, but that people learn when they make discoveries through small errors. See Chapter 6. The mentor expects the mentee to make small mistakes in applying the improvement kata, and it is especially at these points that the mentee will learn, and that the mentor can see what coaching input is required. In other words, the mentor lets the mentee make small missteps, as long as they do not affect the customer, rather than giving the mentee answers up front. With the mentor-mentee teaching approach, Toyota has developed a smart answer to the question of how an organization can teach its members the improvement kata and keep improvement going. The mentor-mentee approach has several benefits. Leaders can discern how a mentee is thinking and thereby determine the appropriate next step and what skills the mentee needs to practice to become a better problem solver. We do not recognize people's current skill development needs when we tell them what to do. This approach, learning by doing with trial and error under guidance, is more effective than relying on written documentation, classroom training, or telling someone what to do for passing on organizational culture, that is, developing specific behavior patterns. This approach develops alignment between company goals and workplace behaviors. It provides focus, direction, and control, but with a considerable amount of leeway that helps people develop their own capability. It is not top-down or bottom-up. It is both simultaneously. The mentor-mentee approach develops individual responsibility and initiative, while also providing common direction and approach. This is what I mean when I refer to operating in the desired corridor. The needs of the mentee and the situation determine the next mentoring and training that the mentor provides. This means that information is flowing both down and up in the organization. As a result, strategic decisions can be more in sync with the actual situation at the process level. Mentor-mentee case example. The best way to explain Toyota's mentor-mentee teaching approach is to show it in action. The following case example provides a close look at a Toyota-style mentor-mentee dialogue. Simultaneously, it also does a good job of demonstrating how Toyota thinks about problem-solving, which is important for deepening our understanding of the improvement kata. The case example is similar to one that was used to help teach problem-solving at Toyota's Georgetown, Kentucky factory, although this one is greatly expanded. Keep in mind that this case is just one example of a Toyota mentor-mentee dialogue, although these dialogues typically mirror the pattern of the improvement kata in some way. They can take on a variety of forms, depending on the situation. The objective here is not to give you a mechanical script for a Toyota mentor-mentee dialogue, but to give you some sense for the pattern, or routine, and thinking inherent in the coaching kata. Setup. start by taking a look at the five-step problem-solving approach called practical problem-solving, which is commonly used at Toyota. This is problem-solving as applied in everyday operations. I will refer to these problem-solving steps as we go through the case example. Steps of Toyota's practical problem-solving. Number 1. Pick up the problem. Problem consciousness. Identify the problem that is the priority. Number 2. Grasp the situation. Go and see. Clarify the problem. What should be happening? What is actually happening? Break the problem into individual problems if necessary. If necessary, use temporary measures to contain the abnormal occurrence until the root cause can be addressed. Locate the point of cause of the problem. Do not go into cause investigation until you find the point of cause. Grasp the tendency of the abnormal occurrence at the point of cause. Number 3. Investigate causes. Identify and confirm the direct cause of the abnormal occurrence. Conduct a 5-why investigation to build a chain of cause-effect relationships to root cause. Stop at the cause that must be addressed to prevent recurrence. Number 4. Develop and test countermeasure. Take one specific action to address the root cause. Try to change only one factor at a time so you can see correlation. Number 5. Follow up. Monitor and confirm results. Standardize successful countermeasure. Reflect. What did we learn during this problem-solving process? As you can see from the 5 steps, there is no magic in this problem-solving approach. The basic steps are well known and similar to what is described in many problem-solving books and training courses. Most managers and engineers I meet have already had some kind of problem-solving training and even still have the course documentation on their office bookshelf. Yet I find almost no one following the problem-solving approach properly. This is a good example of how ineffective classroom training alone is for changing our behavior. Within the practical problem-solving approach, Toyota often uses a funnel to illustrate the point of cause concept, which is mentioned under Step 2, Grasp the Situation. This concept may have arisen because Toyota vehicle assembly factories have long assembly lines. The idea is that when you become aware of a problem, you then need to trace it back up the line or value stream until you find the point where the cause may lie. Try not to go into cause investigation until you think you have found this point. Cast of characters. The mentor-mentee case example takes place in a section of the final vehicle assembly line, called the trim line, at a Toyota assembly plant. How to read the case. In this case, you take on the role of the mentor, the coach, whose task it is to teach the improvement kata. Your character is Tina, the group leader, and your mentees are the 5 team leaders, Dan, Judy, Jeff, Bob, and Mary. The case has 11 chapters. After Chapter 1, each chapter is presented as a unit consisting of a situation, in a box, and a corresponding analysis of Tina's mentoring behaviors. Proceed through the case as follows. Number 1, read the situation in the box. Number 2, then read the analysis of Tina's mentoring behavior for that chapter, where I will point out several aspects of the coaching kata. Number 3, wherever you are asked the question, "If you were Tina, what would you do next?" write your response to this question on a piece of paper before moving on. Summary discussion. At the end of the case, there is a summary discussion of key points on the subject of mentor-mentee dialogue and Toyota-style problem-solving. Begin here. Chapter 1. Paul, the trim shop assistant manager, met with all the trim line group leaders, one of whom is you, to discuss a troubling trend in trim line scrap. Scrap costs had increased 8% over the last 2 months. Paul requested that each group leader initiate problem-solving in their groups to reduce scrap cost generated from their processes. He set the target of returning each group's scrap cost to its earlier level within 30 days. If you were Tina, what would you do next? Chapter 2. After the meeting with Paul, Tina, the Trim Section B group leader, you, decided to analyze her scrap costs to identify where increases in her group had occurred. Tina reviewed her scrap reports from the previous 4 weeks to determine what part her group was scrapping most often and which of the parts being scrapped created the highest cost. She also asked each of her 5 team leaders to sort through the scrap records they had written in the current week to determine the same information. The analysis showed that a side panel interior trim piece in Dan's team was the part that Tina's group had scrapped the most. Due to the quantity of the part scrapped, it was also the highest scrap expense to the group. Tina decided to target her initial activity at scrap reduction on this trim piece. In what step of practical problem-solving is Tina? Analysis. What mentoring coaching behaviors is Tina using? Show me. Mentors prefer facts and data over opinion. The mentor must see deeply him or herself. If Tina tells her team leaders to observe their processes and then report back to her, she will not be in a position to evaluate their comments. More on this in a moment. Single-factor experiments. Tina prefers serial rather than parallel countermeasures. The goal is to learn about the work system, not just shut off the problem via a shotgun blast of countermeasures. Within one contiguous flowing production process, like Tina's group along the assembly line, mentors encourage mentees to only change one thing at a time and check the results. Changing more than one thing simultaneously increases the number of variables and makes cause and effect harder to see, which makes problem-solving difficult. If you try to reduce scrap everywhere in the group, you lose sight of cause and effect and don't develop an understanding of the system. Tina has decided to identify and focus on the biggest problem and not unleash chaos in her group by creating multiple variables. Inappropriate actions by the mentor in this cycle would have been: simply ask the 5 team leaders what they think is the problem. Tell the team leaders that we must reduce scrap. Tell the team leaders to observe their processes, to go and see. In what step of practical problem solving is Tina? Tina is trying to identify the priority problem. She is in step 1, pick up the problem. If you were Tina, what would you do next? Chapter 3. Tina decided to talk with Dan, the team leader of the team that installs the trim, to get a sense of his grasp of the situation. Dan told Tina that he wasn't sure what was going on with the side panel trim piece. He noticed that the team had been scrapping more of the parts lately. He also knew that one of the team members on the process had complained that the parts seemed harder to install. He also felt that he had been answering more end-on cord pulls, calls for assistance, at that process lately, and that they were usually related to the side panel trim. In what step of practical problem-solving are Tina and Dan? Analysis. What mentoring coaching behaviors is Tina using? Leading with questions. Tina's task as a manager and mentor is not to solve the problem, but to develop her mentee's improvement capabilities through practice. Tina would garner no praise or credit from her superiors if she were to solve the scrap problem herself, because by doing that she would have wasted an opportunity to further develop the capability of the organization. Tina's job is to develop Dan as a problem solver. Since a mentor's job is to develop the mentee, they tend not to quickly tell the mentee what to do. Although mentors are experienced in problem solving, they do not point out solutions or give detailed instructions. The mentee is given a challenge, a problem, and is expected to make mistakes along the way on a small scale. Those very mistakes show the mentor what behaviors the mentee needs to practice and what inputs the mentor should give. By asking questions and observing how the mentee responds, the mentor learns what the mentee is thinking. The mentor then provides guidance to move the mentee into the corridor of thinking and acting prescribed by the improvement kata. For these reasons, in this cycle, Tina will not tell Dan to go and observe the process. She will ask Dan what next step he proposes and observe how he answers. Dan is thinking about the problem, but Tina is thinking about how Dan is approaching the problem. The power of teaching by asking questions goes back to Socrates, but it is a difficult skill to learn. The method fails if it is used by someone in authority who is simply trying to convince others of a particular solution or answer. People can detect the difference between authentic, neutral inquiry versus an effort to persuade them. There is a big difference between using questions to get a person to come to your preconceived solution versus using questions to discern how a person is thinking and what they need to learn. Inappropriate actions by the mentor in this cycle would have been: Tell Dan to go and observe his process. Tell Dan how to proceed. In what step of practical problem solving are Tina and Dan? They are about to get into step two, grasp the situation. If you were Tina, what would you do next? Chapter 4. In talking to Dan, Tina realized that he had not picked up the problem with the side panel trim, even though there were indications that a problem existed. Tina realized that she needed to work with Dan to further develop his problem-solving skills. Tina and Dan went to the scrap area to look at the most recent side panel trim pieces to be scrapped. She asked him to look at all the scrap trim pieces and tell her what he observed. The first thing Dan noticed was that a nylon clip was broken on most of the parts. He showed the clip to Tina and proposed that they call incoming inspection to check if the parts were being delivered from the supplier with cracks in the nylon clip. Analysis. What mentoring coaching behaviors is Tina using? Sometimes the mentor is directive about the next step. After hearing Dan's response, Tina proposed they go look at the scrapped pieces rather than waiting for Dan to suggest this step. Toyota's mentoring approach is not done exclusively through questions. It is not supposed to be a guessing game for the mentee. The mentor is asking questions in order to see what the mentee is thinking. Once that has occurred, the mentor may make a directive statement regarding the next step, but not about solutions. Go and see. Tina went with Dan to see the situation. Had Dan in the past proven himself to be a highly experienced problem solver, it is possible that Tina may have let him go alone and then report back to her. But she knew from his response that he was a beginner in problem solving and needed more of her coaching help. If Tina had sent Dan to the production process and scrap area and asked him to report back his findings without going and looking for herself, she would have effectively nullified her ability to manage further. If a mentor does not have first-hand understanding of the situation, then they cannot lead. This is an important point. Tina would have no way to evaluate whether what Dan was saying and proposing was on the right track or not. She would essentially be out of the picture and could only nod and say, "Okay, let's do that." This points out an Achilles heel in management by objectives as we have been practicing it. Although Tina's job is to develop the improvement capability of her mentees, she must understand the real situation deeply enough to evaluate what her mentee is telling her in order to see what the mentee needs to learn and what the mentee's next step is. So mentors are generally paying attention to two things: the situation under scrutiny and how the mentee is approaching the situation. Observe, don't interview. Many of us would interview the operators in the process to see what they think might be the problem. As we have already discussed, this only gives you people's opinions, not facts and data. Mentors and mentees must learn to see deeply for themselves and understand what is happening. Inappropriate actions by the mentor in this cycle would have been: have Dan go and observe the process and report back to Tina. Ask or interview the workers in the process. If you were Tina, what would you do next? Dan has made a proposal to which you must respond. Chapter 5. Tina responded that when they had finished their investigation and established that, in fact, it was a parts quality problem, they would call incoming inspection. In the meantime, she asked Dan not to jump to conclusions too soon and to look at the parts again. When Dan looked at the scrapped parts again, he noticed that one of the three mounting studs on every part had damaged threads on its end. In what step of practical problem-solving are Tina and Dan? Analysis. What mentoring coaching behaviors is Tina using? Guide the mentee to work it back to the point of cause. If Dan were to contact the parts receiving department at this early point, it would initiate a lot of activity, but the situation is not yet understood. Imagine how much waste would result if people from many different areas were contacting incoming inspection so early in their problem solving. Engaging the parts receiving department in this way is, incidentally, not uncommon. Mentors will guide their mentees to first grasp the condition where the problem was discovered, and then work it back from there if the evidence suggests doing that. In what step of practical problem solving are Tina and Dan? Tina and Dan are still trying to clarify what is happening. They have not yet found the point of cause and are still in step two, grasp the situation. Chapter 8 continued. Chapter 6 of the Case. Tina suggested to Dan that they go and observe the side panel trim installation process. They checked the line side parts for the damaged stud threads and did not find any before watching the operator perform the process. Then Tina and Dan went to look at the work standard for the side panel trim process. The standard required that the team member pick up the part and the nut driver at the parts rack before moving to the vehicle to install the part. The driver is placed on the vehicle floor, and the part is then positioned so the nylon clips line up with holes in the body panel. The team member then knocks the clips into the panel with his hand. Next, the team member picks up the driver and loads its socket with a nut. He then installs a nut into each of the three studs. After watching the team member install several parts, Tina asked Dan if he noticed anything that could be a potential problem with the installation. Dan said that everything looked normal to him. He could see no deviation from the work standard. Tina asked him to look again, but this time to focus on what specific actions the team member takes to install the nuts to the studs. In what step of practical problem solving are Tina and Dan? Analysis. What mentoring coaching behaviors is Tina using? Refer to the work standard or target condition before observing a process. Tina and Dan check the work standard before observing the process. Be sure to understand the way the process should be operating so you have a point of comparison. This is why the first of the five questions is, what is the target condition standard at this process? When the mentee makes a proposal or statement, the mentor should respond quickly. When I first received this advice from a Toyota person, I mistakenly thought it meant that the mentor must fully understand the situation and know the solution. Try as I might, that was something I could almost never achieve. Tina has asked Dan to look again at the process and focus specifically on what the team member does to install the nuts to the studs. It seems like Tina knows the solution, doesn't it? A young American working at Toyota in Japan once told me how it initially drove him crazy that his Japanese mentors would ask him questions and seem to already have a solution in mind. "If you know what you want me to do, then just tell me," he wanted to say. After some time, the American learned that the mentor does not and should not have a preconceived solution in mind. The mentor must answer quickly, but he only has to see what the next step is. The mentor cannot fully know the way ahead, but he must grasp the situation deeply enough to know what the next step is so he can lead his mentee to and through it. And if the next step is unclear, then the answer is almost always, "Let's go and see." In most cases, the next step is, in fact, to get more specific facts or data. Once I learned this, my own efforts to experiment with mentoring became considerably more effective. Tina does not have in mind a solution to the problem. It is Dan's responsibility to solve the problem and her responsibility to develop Dan's capability to do that. But she does know that the damage to the threads on the studs is likely to be occurring when the nut is driven onto the stud. She has an inkling about the point of cause and is guiding Dan in that direction. Go and see. Imagine in what direction this effort might be going if Tina had stayed in her office and Dan was reporting his impressions to her there. Tina could not do this mentoring if she was not at the process with Dan, understanding the current situation firsthand. Overlap of responsibility. Although Dan is responsible for the doing and Tina cannot just tell him what to do, since her job is to teach Dan, she knows that she in turn bears a lot of the responsibility for the results. In what step of practical problem-solving are Tina and Dan? Tina has recognized that the point of cause is probably where the nut is driven onto the stud, but Dan has not. Tina would be ready to enter step 3, investigate causes, but since Dan is the one who has to solve the problem, they are still in step 2, grasp the situation. Tina is guiding Dan to the next step in a way that allows him to learn the lesson for himself. Chapter 7. Then Dan noticed that the team member had to install the nut through a hole in the side panel and that the team member could not see the end of the stud to assure that the nut was correctly located. The team member had to rely on feel to determine if the nut was aligned. Dan told Tina that now he knew what the problem was. The side panel trim installation had two new team members working on it in the past month. The new team members just didn't have the feel for the nut alignment yet, and that was why the threads were getting damaged and the parts were being scrapped. Dan suggested that they would need to do a better job of training new team members so they wouldn't strip the threads on the studs. Analysis: No mentoring activity by Tina in Chapter 7. If you were Tina, what would you do next? Dan has made a proposal to which you must respond. Chapter 8. Tina suggested that first they should confirm the relationship between the number of scrap parts and new team members on the process. She and Dan reviewed the scrap records for the group and compared any increase in the amount of scrapped side panel trim pieces to the dates that new team members were on the process. They found a direct relationship. Each time there was a new team member, there was a significant increase in the number of trim pieces that were scrapped. Dan told Tina that he would have a meeting with all the team members who worked on that process immediately and tell them that they needed to be more careful. He also said that he would retrain all of them on installing the nut. In what step of practical problem-solving are Tina and Dan? Analysis: What mentoring, coaching behaviors is Tina using? Show me. Mentors prefer facts and data over opinion. In what step of practical problem-solving are Tina and Dan? Tina and Dan have reached step 3, investigate causes. If you were Tina, what would you do next? Dan has made a proposal to which you must respond. Chapter 9. Tina asked Dan if he knew what the team members were doing when the threads stripped. Dan replied that he didn't know what they were doing, but he knew they weren't doing it correctly. Tina suggested they revisit the process and take a closer look at what the operators were actually doing and what the circumstances were when the threads stripped out. When they observed the process again, they saw the team member on the process load the nut into the driver socket. Next, the team member started the driver to spin the socket and improve the setting of the nut in the socket. The trigger is then released to locate the nut on the stud. Then the driver trigger is depressed again to install the nut on the stud. Tina and Dan didn't see anything abnormal about the way the team member they were observing did the process. This team member didn't create any stripped threads while he was on the process that shift. Tina suggested to Dan that they observe one of the new team members on this process. Then they saw a different technique being used. This team member kept the trigger of the driver depressed while he was locating the nut on the stud. Tina suggested that she and Dan conduct an experiment to confirm that what they had seen could create stripped threads. In what step of practical problem-solving are Tina and Dan? Analysis: What mentoring coaching behaviors is Tina using? Focus on understanding the process, not on implementing countermeasures. Tina and Dan are at step 3, investigate causes. But with his proposals, Dan is skipping over this and going right into step 4. Develop and test countermeasure. This is not unusual. We often think that good problem-solving means applying countermeasures. In contrast, the focus in problem-solving at Toyota is on understanding the current situation so deeply that the countermeasure becomes obvious. Mentees are prevented from introducing countermeasures before they sufficiently grasp the situation. If we introduce countermeasures before understanding the situation, we create more variables, which interferes with identifying root causes. In the worst case, the wrong countermeasure might temporarily reduce occurrence of the problem, making us believe our effort was a success. Focus on the process, not the people. Mentors know that the vast majority of problems are caused by the system within which people work, not by the individuals themselves. They assume that the operators are doing their best, that if they were in the operator's shoes, the same thing would still have happened, and that training alone does not improve a process. An important point to realize here is that if we did carry out Dan's suggestion of retraining the new operators, then the scrap rate is likely to decrease. However, this would not be because the root cause had been identified and eliminated, but because extra managerial attention had been paid to the process. The same problem would return again later, because the process itself has not actually been improved in any way. To instill this thinking in their mentees, mentors will ask questions such as, "What is preventing the operator from working to standard?" or, "Do you know what the person was doing when the problem occurred?" Dan is proposing training, but training in what? How does the process, the standard, need to be changed so the process is actually improved? He has not yet answered this question. Testing over talking. Conduct small-scale tests before implementing